This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 64 with Sonia Cuff. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by Sonia Cuff. Sonia, greetings.
Hi, how are you doing?
So, as we were chatting just before we started up, you actually live in another state, which is experiencing some lovely Australian summer weather. So, why don't you let everybody know exactly who you are, what your business is, and where you're based?
Yeah, no worries. So, my name is Sonia Cuff. My husband and I, Tony, run a computer troubleshooters franchise up in the northern suburbs of Brisbane. And our business is Computer Troubleshooters Aspley. So we provide managed services for SMB clients and made the move over to sunny Queensland about 10 years ago from New Zealand, where it was a heck of a lot colder. So it's probably taken us this long to acclimatise. Thank goodness for air conditioning, but no, it's Brisbane is certainly a beautiful part of the world to live and work and play in.
I thought it was because you didn't like hobbits, that's why you moved.
No, there were no hobbits around when we moved. We were pre-hobbit mania, but it's a bit of a long story. My parents actually moved here 4 years before we did, and we came over to visit and just didn't like going back home again.
Well, makes sense. Yeah, saves on the travel and the passport and immigration control.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so what I've asked Sonia to come on and discuss basically is around the gender inequality that we see in technology and whether that is something that affects, you know, the cloud going forward. So setting the stage is that I was involved in a technology group that basically, you know, focused on small to medium businesses. Now, what I found was that after a while, I found the discussions were getting a bit stale and a bit repetitive, so I decided to move and have a look at Meetup. So meetup.com, got out and got involved in a number of groups, entrepreneurial, non-business, non-technology style groups. Now, when I did that, two major things struck me. Firstly, was a completely different aspect, a completely different opinion and outlook on technology. Technology was an enabler, so again, it was moving from the speeds and feeds into how to use the technology to basically make money and to run a business successfully. And the other thing that I noticed particularly was that there was a far greater ratio of women in these sort of groups than there was in the technology group that I've come from. So if you go back and start doing analysis on that, the original group there, the question I was beginning to ask myself, does the fact that you have this gender imbalance, is that causing or limiting this group and its thinking? Now, the whole thing started to draw together to me when we started to look at cloud computing. So cloud computing typically is removing a lot of the hardware from on-premise. Now the hardware has typically been done by people with, you know, screwdrivers and utility belts and those sort of things, which has been typically a male occupation. Now with cloud computing removing that and moving to things like Azure, Office 365, where that's not so critical, is that basically enabling, you know, the gender balance to come back into the sway? Sort of what's your thinking on that sort of thing from your perspective, Sonia?
Yeah, okay. So there's a couple of different elements here. And when I started in IT, I basically got mentored into an IT role when I was working for a large corporate. So I started off working in the banking world on the sort of customer-facing side of a bank. And we had problems with our computer systems. And I was on the phone to help their second or third level support to try and get some DOS programs fixed. And I said to them, I don't know where to start with what you tell me to do, but when you do it, I can follow the logic. And I got an opportunity to join a project that was rolling out new technology to branches and they were looking for people that were used to being on the front line and dealing with the customers when the doors opened. So I was very fortunate that my IT career from its early days wasn't a very large corporation. I didn't start out in SMB. I didn't do any university degree in computer engineering or go down that road with an integrity of learning to code. I was basically thrown in the deep end into an infrastructure upgrade project and then into a third level support role. And I think that gives you a different perspective for starters. when you're looking at selling IT services, because you are very much indoctrined when you work for a larger corporate that the IT decisions get made because they form part of a business strategy and they're a business decision before they're a technology decision. So that does give you a very different perspective. As far as the cloud goes and enabling more women in IT, it's still very much the new thing, and I think that gives women and anybody entering IT, it's not quite a ground zero opportunity, but it's a chance to pick up some skills as the rest of the pack is learning them, instead of having to compete against other people that have got traditional infrastructure skills and have been, you know, fixing servers and setting them up since Windows NT351 days. So there is a wee bit more of an opportunity for people that are new to technology to get into the cloud computing space.
So are you noticing, I mean, obviously you're involved with computer troubleshooters as a franchise. I mean, is it fair to say that that's still a fairly male-orientated organisation? I mean, not saying it's good or bad, but is that very much male-orientated?
Yeah, it is. And it's not something that you try and steer in that direction. It's just something that organically has happened. And a large majority of our franchisees are what we like to call corporate refugees. So they're the guys that have been doing IT as a career in some shape or form for somebody else for a number of years and have decided to go out and start up their own business and work for themselves instead. And because that's the kind of person that the franchise attracts, there aren't a heck of a lot of solid base of women who have, you know, a 10-year IT career that are looking to go out and work for themselves. It's just that balance doesn't flow through.
So, I mean, how does that, you know, is that something that you know, you find that affects the way you run business or the work with the industry, or is it just something that, you know, is come to be accepted and, you know, you work within those boundaries?
I've learned over the years that as a woman in tech, you do have to expect a degree of surprise. And even now, that still is an element, whether you're dealing with a new customer or whether or not you're dealing with somebody else that you've met in the industry, there still is a little bit of hesitation until you start to speak out and you start to show people your skills and that you know what you're doing. And then it's actually not that hard to be accepted into the fold if you start to demonstrate that you do have the skills and the capabilities to do so. So, I must admit, I have been blessed. I haven't found it too difficult to kind of form those relationships both with clients and with other people in the IT industry. But you do accept that there still is a bit of an element of surprise that when you go to a meeting, especially if you run a business with your husband, you go to a meeting with a new client, and I think that they do kind of expect that he'll be the technical one and I'm just there to take the minutes. So it is quite surprising to see that smile when you start talking about a topic and I take the lead on it, and the kind of eyebrow raises if, oh, she knows what she's talking about too.
So the customers that you're dealing with, are they typically male? Is that the principle, or is there a variation there as well?
Yeah, well, so we're talking SMBs, usually under 50 seats. So we're usually dealing with the owner or the general manager of the business. And yeah, they are pretty predominantly male across all the industries that we work with, actually. And business is a funny thing. It tends to be those traditional roles of the accounts person and the HR person and, you know, some of the staff on the ground and some of the industries that are the females, but predominantly the owners are males.
Okay, and I mean, is that something that you see changing? Is that, you know, again, something that's moving towards, you know, the balance, or is it still, do you see very much still biased, you know, in one direction?
Yeah, look, I think it still is very biased, but I don't know that is something that is orchestrated or is something that is negative. I've always had the belief that if you advertise a role, you should be choosing the right person for the job. I don't care if they're male, female, purple with pink polka dots. If you do the job and you've got the right attitude, then that's what you should be selected on. And I think, you know, one of the other side issues that women have in technology and women have in the workforce in general is being paid the same as a male for an equivalent role, which, to be honest, I haven't seen too much of in Australia and New Zealand, but I know that it's a bigger deal in places like America where they have a much bigger workforce.
Okay, so again, with this, change to cloud computing and the ability perhaps to remove the infrastructure or the hardware side of it, the infrastructure side is probably still there. Do you see it as now a more encouraging, area for women to get into if they're interested in technology? I mean, does it make it easy for them to overcome the stereotypes and perhaps get involved and, maybe do things like app development or, become an IT pro specifically? Do you see that now as an enabler?
Yeah, I do. I think that cloud opens an opportunity that women might not have realized exists in IT, which is more of that connection between technology and business. And it's the people side. And we know that cloud computing very much is a consultancy sell. It's something that you have to put together along with business benefits. And even once it's in, it's a sell that you really need to nurture through the whole life cycle of the product so that businesses are getting the most value out of it. And I think that's a lot harder to see when you're an outsider to the industry if you're talking about shipping boxes. But with cloud computing, that's certainly an opportunity that shouts loud and clear with that technology platform itself, which may be more appealing to women. The other thing that I have a bit of a passion about is the movements that are encouraging women to get into coding. And I know there's a lot of great programs out there like Girls Who Code that are specifically focusing on getting women the opportunity and younger girls the opportunity to try that as an entry into IT. Now, I don't for a second knock those kind of efforts. I think they're absolutely fantastic if that's the kind of thing that you have a passion for trying. However, I'm not a coder. I'm not a software developer. I never have been. And if you had told me when I was in year 12 that if I wanted to get into IT, I was going to have to learn software programming, I probably would have never moved into that industry because it bores me to tears. So I think cloud computing is another opportunity to say to girls and women, if you want to look at tech as a career, don't just think that it's either screwdrivers or it's cutting code, because there's so many other facets of technology as an industry out there, and ones like cloud computing that can be and certainly are a lot more customer facing.
Well, it's interesting because you speak of the difference between coding and using the screwdrivers and that sort of thing. One of the again, one of my my favorite product is obviously SharePoint. Now, SharePoint is designed as a collaboration tool. So the idea there is obviously you can share information about your business files and folders and calendars and contacts. Now, one of the big issues I see, especially in the SMB space, especially from SMB resellers, is the lack of uptake of that product. Now, that to me initially started to be a well, it's too technical, it's very different from SMB file shares, it's all the sort of technical reasons. But now beginning to step back and look at it, I'm thinking that perhaps because of the bias towards the male side of the spectrum that really don't collaborate perhaps as well as women do, maybe that's a reason that those sort of tools aren't seeing the popularity upswing in the SMB, because we've got male-dominated IT professionals talking to male-dominated owners of businesses who just don't seem to get the idea of collaboration naturally. I mean, would you say that, is that a fair comment? Is that something that may be affecting those sort of products?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, if you introduce a new technology to a bunch of IT people, they will naturally gravitate to the how does it work? How do I set it up? How do I configure it? How do I migrate to it? And none of those questions are related to how will the business use it? How will it actually benefit the end customer? And so SharePoint and SharePoint Online falls into that basket. It's the kind of product where even if you did a course on how to configure SharePoint, to sell it into a small business and get them using it, as I said before, is still part of that consultancy sell. So you still need to have it clear in your head that the product does deliver a business benefit. This is how it does it. These are the kind of conversations you need to start having with customers about how they work. And then you can map some of those business processes into SharePoint workflows, for example, to show them how SharePoint can help them run their business to that extent. So it certainly is more soft skills, and it's more touchy-feely business related to sell that sort of a product than it is, oh yeah, you need to upgrade your server.
Well, I think part of it, obviously, is cloud computing is about enabling employees rather than, you know, necessarily just providing them something and letting them, leaving them to their own devices. And I think that's where I see, again, some sort of lack of information being provided by resellers. A lot of them, again, they're so interested, I said, in the speeds and the feeds and all that sort of stuff, and that's great, and they keep the box running. But in this day and age, again, the dependency on it is lower and lower and lower. It's being offloaded into large data centers with Microsoft, Google, Amazon, that sort of stuff. So it actually comes down to the enablement. And at the moment, we're probably in a bit of a, you know, an economic downswing. Now, one would think that when that does end and we are looking to move into, you know, an upswing economy, what we'll see is obviously more and more businesses starting up. They will be looking, obviously, to go straight to cloud computing. They won't be wanting to run servers and equipment on premises. There'll be demand for those collaboration tools. So one would think that there is obviously much greater demand for that skill set and those skills that you're talking about. So, you know, from what you see, the interactions you have, you know, in the communities there, is enough being done to foster the opportunities for girls, or actually encouraging them to get into that sort of stuff? Because again, one of the big catch cries we've got, IT resellers no less, are saying we don't have enough skilled staff. We just don't have enough people with the skills to be able not only, you know, make it run, but also implement it for customers. I mean, is enough being done at the entry level to encourage people, both male and female, to get into these sort of roles?
Well, that's a very good question, and you know, I certainly couldn't name a program or initiative that specifically addresses and targets the skill shortage of cloud computing and introducing people into that technology as an entry into IT. I know, for example, there are programs out there like Women in Technology run a great program to help women get back into the IT workforce if they've been away for a number of years. For example, if they've gone on maternity leave and they've taken some time off with the kids, and now maybe the kids have gone to school and they're looking at re-entering the workforce. So for those kind of women who have an IT bent, who have been away from technology for, you know, 5, maybe even 10 years, there are some great programs out there to help them get up to speed with what's changed and how to get back into the market with their IT skills. But I'm not sure that there's anything specifically out there that speaks to the cloud computing skill shortage, which is a shame when you think about it. Because if you have a look at the younger generation that are coming through, they're the ones that naturally have a bent on how Facebook works, how Dropbox works, how Google Apps work. You know, they've been exposed to that stuff at a very early age, and it is quite natural to them. So it wouldn't be that difficult, one would think, to start mentoring that kind of a person into an IT career based around more of the enterprise style and the corporate type IT cloud computing tools that businesses use that give them more control across the platform and kind of speak to that business benefit side.
Okay, so what we're seeing, again, in the industry is generally many of the IT rock stars, the people who are doing startups that are very successful, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the all those sort of businesses generally seem to be you know, males are the ones that are running these organisations and pushing these forward. Now, if you do a bit of reading and seeing what else is going around, there's certainly a fair share of, you know, women in technology and women achieving things with businesses and technology. But again, it seems that society is holding up these you know, startup rock stars, typically as male, as being the role models. I mean, is that having an effect as well, do you think? I mean, is that biasing, you know, potential people, women who want to get in technology, again, reinforcing the male stereotype that's all for males?
Yeah, I think it certainly is a little bit daunting, and we definitely need more stories about women who are successful in technology. But there are a fantastic small group of ladies in America who have started up a Google Hangout that they record once a week, and they have amazing IT skills. I'm just trying to remember the name of their podcast because it's gone off the tip of my tongue. But they've started up their podcast only very recently to try and bring to the fore the stories of amazing women in technology. And we're not necessarily talking, you know, women who have founded a startup company, developed an application and sold it for billions of dollars. We're talking about women who look after large infrastructures with thousands and thousands of seats globally and have very important roles within traditional organisations. And, you know, they are also just as much of the rock stars as the IT world that, that women need to see are out there is something to aspire to for having a great IT career.
Yeah, so I think, again, it's very interesting. Now, one of the again, the contraries to all that is that what I see from a business like Microsoft, for example, especially here in Australia, is there is certainly a very, very much greater, you know, gender balance in the organisation. Now, admittedly, they're perhaps not all in deep technology or developers or whatever, but as an IT organisation overall, it is somewhat refreshing to get that sort of gender balance, and I think that's really great. I mean, do you have any other examples potentially of organisations that you've come across that you think, you know, are really working hard on this diversity question?
Yeah, I just remembered the name of that podcast is Current Status. So look up Current Status, and that's the IT Girls of America that are making some waves. But look, I think I was very blessed when I was 18 to get an opportunity to start in an IT department, and that was because my team leader and my manager in those departments were prepared to take the chance and go, let's give her a try, let's get her in the organisation, let's teach her the basics and basically see if she sinks or swims. And I went to a Women in Technology breakfast at the Microsoft Australia Partner Conference, and I do hesitate sometimes about going to those sort of events, but the thing that came through loud and clear from the speakers, who were all fantastic women in IT, was women underestimate themselves. And if you put a job description that has 10 requirements, a woman might take a look at that list and go, oh, well, I can do 8 of those things, but there's 2 of them that I've never touched before and I'm really unsure about, so I won't apply. Whereas a male might turn around and look at that list and go, well, there's 8 of them I've looked at, and the other 2 I'm sure I could pick up. And they're just a wee bit more confident, I think, with putting themselves forward into situations where they aren't 100% capable or confident, but they're willing to step into that uncertainty and make that stretch. And I sometimes think that women need a bit more assistance with that and encouragement to turn around and say, step up and give it a try. Because if you have a supportive network within that IT department and a supportive management, you know, line above you, you look back in a few years and just wonder why, you know, you didn't jump at some of this stuff sooner, because the amount of stuff that you pick up as you go along when you're in that kind of an environment is just invaluable.
So, I mean, how do we go about, you know, what sort of an action plan that we can, you know, that should be in place to sort of encourage this to break down some of the barriers and encourage, you know, a better diversity, you know, which I think is something that is required, because otherwise we end up with a, you know, something like, you know, such a fundamental part of our society these days, you know, the technology side being very skewed to the, you know, the views of, you know, one side of our community, which, again, you know, has perhaps served us all right so far, because it's pushed ahead and it's got us where we need to be. But going forward, I'm beginning to see, again, limitations, things like adoption of SharePoint, those sort of things are becoming limiting, because, again, we're effectively perhaps turning away 50% of our population and not encouraging them to become involved. So, I mean, what sort of things do we need to do? Is it something that we need to tackle early on in schools and those sort of things, or is it something, do you think, that we can look at, you know, in the workforce today and you know, employment as we see it, you know, in society now?
Yeah, there are so many different facets to that. I think we need to start in the schools, we need to start in the high schools to encourage the girls that IT is an option and is a subject that they might like to try, and actually give them some real-world examples of the kind of work that they can be doing that does make a difference in the real world, so they don't just think that IT is the geeky subject that's about building boxes and coding. So, yeah, they certainly need to encourage. And that goes back, Dan, you see the real-life examples every day where women will be, or girls will be doing IT as a subject in high school, and they'll be 1 or 2 females in the entire class. So it really does start at that grassroots level. And then when we look at the corporate world in terms of how we hire and how we advertise, I know that so many managers, frontline managers, just beat their heads against the wall about the number of women that apply for roles that they advertise. And they're like, well, we can't fill positions with more women if they're not applying, and we really need to look at, you know, why women aren't applying for these roles. Is it because they do need a wee bit of assurance that they can step into a role that they may feel is above their head to start with? Or do we need to start looking at the other issues that the female workforce, where they have had children or plan on having a family, if they do become the predominant caregiver? I'm not saying that that's always the case these days either, but obviously that's something that a woman who is starting a family, if she wants to be at home with the kids or spend time with her children when they are young, she has to take that work-life balance into consideration when she's looking at roles that she's applying for. And it's very much a family decision when you get into that kind of space, because it's a discussion that might be had with your partner if you've got one as well, about who's doing a role and who's looking after the kids and how you juggle all that as well. So that's certainly something that needs addressing in the workforce still.
But wouldn't you say that the technology we have today, the remote access, the mobile devices, give anybody the flexibility to spend obviously more time in an environment that suits them? So again, you would see that the trend is away from going to work, starting at 9, sitting in a cubicle, going home at 5. It's very much a fluid environment. I think also part of the issue is we're still seeing, you know, bosses from traditional roles who say, no, I have to see my employees, they have to be at work, they have to be under the eye, so I know that they're actually doing work. The more progressive ones are, you know, as long as people get the job done, they can work from wherever they want, whenever they want. I think that is changing, and that's obviously providing benefit as well. I mean, is that sort of a benefit to doing that, to enabling what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right in terms of the technology is there to do it, but the challenge is convincing traditional managers that the technology is an enabler, and from a great employee you will get the same, if not even better, results sometimes by giving them that remote access and giving them the flexibility in their hours. So I think the organisational culture needs to support it from a management level to start with, but then also with peers, because I think you're still finding a bit of a disjoint where you've got some remote workers and some who are still doing a traditional 9-to-5 job that might be in the same team, of this culture of, you know, well, if you're not at your desk, then you're slacking off. So we still need to support and highlight the results, and also the remote team building is then another aspect of the culture of how you link your people together and make them feel like they are connected if they're not sitting at a desk next to each other Monday to Friday. So the technology is definitely there. It's certainly it's an organisation and a cultural shift that the traditional workforce still struggles with sometime. And, you know, maybe that'll change in the coming years. Maybe that the Facebook generation that are coming through into the workforce won't see that as such a big deal anymore.
So what about the concept of, obviously we've got things like Link, we've got Skype, we've got remote access tools, we've got things to collaborate, we've got, you know, SharePoint, we've got all these sort of things that allow us to work remotely, we've got our, you know, mobiles, all that sort of stuff. With those technology enablers, are you finding that, you know, again, are women taking to these and using these, you know, as they would socially in the office? So if they were, you know, meeting around the water cooler or whatever, or you know, talking about stuff, are they using those technology tools when they are remote to enable that? Or is there still a hesitancy to actually use the technology to continue the conversation beyond the office?
I think it varies. It really does depend on the organisation and the culture that you've got. I think you find that women, once they get into a social networking tool, are very conversational and are quite happy to communicate and on those kind of tools as opposed to traditional, send their email or pick up a phone. But it just depends on the culture of the other people in the team and how open they are to that. I know people in traditional businesses that still go, I would never have a Facebook account. I don't understand why you'd ever use it in an office. It's going to be a waste of time. People are just going to sit there chatting and there'll be no business benefit. And yet I was playing with Lotus Same Time and instant messaging in an enterprise space, you know, very many years ago, improving the business benefits of things like online presence awareness and just those quick chats are you online? Can you look at this kind of thing? So it certainly is there, and it's certainly something that women, I think, would naturally gravitate towards if the rest of the team and the culture supports it.
So again, I mean, for me, and again, the Office 365 space, you know, a tool like Yammer, is a tool like Yammer potentially going to enable that, you know, more so than doing, you know, the traditional emails?
I would like to think so, but I know more than one organisation that has had the mother of all battles trying to get Yammer adopted within their organisation, because it's not just a technology change, it's a cultural shift, and that's the thing that we have to get heads around. So sometimes the Yammer adoption process is a little bit like, you know, pulling teeth, and I know that there are corporate communications consultants and just, you know, some fantastic case studies and stuff coming out of Microsoft about how effective Yammer can be, but that's a bit of a long adoption process to put it in from day one and to get people used to using that as a platform.
But again, is that limitation based on the management being more traditional and not understanding the collaboration idea, whereas perhaps if they'd been, you know, if it was coming perhaps more from, you know, the female side of things, where they understand the conversations and the benefits in networking more, that it would, the adoption would be quicker and faster?
Yeah, maybe. It's certainly something that's got to be supported by management to start with, but even if the managers are waving the flag and saying this is a great thing, it's still the individual staff members and the employees that have to have the buy-in to use the tool. And I think, you know, in the traditional workforce that we still have, that's still a bit of a roadblock.
Well, I think also too, part of it is this the idea of I have to see all my information. So the example that I use typically is, you know, trust the algorithm. So what's happened now, we have so many forms of information, so much that we have to come across, it's impossible for us to be across it all. So we have to trust the algorithm in these social networks to bubble up the information that's most relevant to us. So things like Delve, Yammer, obviously in Office 365, Facebook, those sort of things are making decisions based on what they see us doing to give us that sort of information. So I think, you know, again, that's an important thing, and that's where a lot of distrust potentially is they have this fear they're not getting the all the information, but the reality is, I think, is that you know, a vast majority of the information is probably irrelevant. They don't read it, or they don't even, you know, delete it straight away. So again, I think there's that balance when it comes to that information. But I think it's important to again, if nothing else, to look at these technologies, because again, the younger generation are certainly going to expect to have these tools available to them, you know, when they come into the workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. The one of the flip sides of that is information overload, and it's quite interesting working with people who are traditional email users, and so, you know, they run their life in their inbox, and every piece of information has to filter through their inbox, and they want to see an email for every single notification every time something new is posted. So to take them into another technology tool is a real challenge. And I'm a big fan of the Daily Digest. So in Yammer, I get a Daily Digest email that shows me all the new things that have gone on in the last day, and that gives me one email to go through in a few seconds to say, okay, well, that topic I'm not interested in, that one I know nothing about, but that one there I can help, and that one there I can click on the link, get into Yammer and contribute to the conversation. So I don't have time to sit with Yammer logged in all day, every day, and answer every single post as it comes up. I've got my own work to do as well. But once you refine that process and you get comfortable with that kind of a notification, and you can sort of let go of the fact that you might miss a conversation that's posted in the morning until you see it the next day, then life tends to run a little bit smoother.
All right, so I mean, we need to start obviously bringing this to a close, and we probably just need to focus on our initial question here. So if you were, a female looking to get into technology today, and obviously there are some biases and there are some challenges, I mean, and you're, you know, at high school or whatever, you're doing the right subjects and looking to go to university or whatever, I mean, what sort of advice would you give, women who are looking to make technology a career and do it successfully?
I think the best piece of advice I would give them would be find your flock, basically. Find a few key people, ask your teachers for some references, look out in the industry and see if you can find, a little cheer squad that are going to help support you in your efforts, because it's not always a smooth ride, the industry, to get in. All you've got to do is look at the press for things like Gamergate and see some of the conversations that go on. And it's not always an easy field to get into. So I really do think that women that are looking at it as a career need to find a little cheer squad or a few mentors that are going to help them through those bumps and encourage them.
I think also too, as I generally always point out, the meetup.com is a great, is a great solution. I think there's plenty of technology groups, and I'm sure there are plenty of women in technology groups available there as well as a starting point. But I think, as you mentioned, one of the most important things is to look at finding a group or a mentor or someone that you can, obviously go and speak to about that sort of thing, who's perhaps, done it before or is involved in that sort of environment. So, again, as with everything, it's not what you know, it's who you know, which I think is the most important thing moving forward for anybody in technology, but obviously by the sound of it, more so with women.
Yeah, and look, women in technology themselves actually run a mentoring program where women can connect up with other female mentors in IT. But for me, it was a lot more informal, and more informal than that. I had a manager and a team leader who were my mentors and who were my chair squad. So I don't necessarily think that those mentors have to be females in the industry as well. Sometimes your best advocates and your best cheerleaders will actually be supportive males in the industry too.
Yeah, I think that's, and again, that's the thing, it's being the open-minded and looking at both sides of the fences. And I think the opportunities that we've got these days are so broad that, again, if you do get resistance in one location, you can always move, basically find someone else or find some other opportunity. So there's no, I don't think there's a lock-in potentially that there used to be now. And again, that's why when I started looking to other groups besides the one I was initially involved with, it was such an eye-opening experience to find that, real business people with real business issues that weren't, bogged down in the technology or the latest version of this or the latest laptop. They just needed it to do a job. So I think, again, that's the reality we face today. And with the communications tools and the social networking, there's never been that opportunity. So at the end of the day, I think the opportunity is there. It's just a matter of, you may have to go and seek it out, do a bit of work, but I would certainly suggest that the people and the solutions you're after are out there, and they're also much more accessible than they ever used to be.
Absolutely. And if we can start broadening the concept to women that are looking to get into IT and girls when they're still at school, to show them just that complete breadth of what the IT industry is and what they can do in it. When I did computers at school, it was a subject that didn't qualify towards your university entrance in New Zealand. And it was very much seen by some as, this little subject you did on the side if you needed an extra subject and you weren't going to uni, which I hadn't planned on doing. And I know that that's changed somewhat these days, but I think we need to keep promoting to girls that there are so many different avenues in this industry that you can take and do as a career, that started with those fundamentals of those IT basics as a subject in school.
Well, I think also too, you can look at something like, you mentioned not getting into the dev side, but again, look at the app development world. I mean, there's nothing to stop people getting into developing an app. And again, if you've got an idea that appeals to at least 50% of the population, that's a pretty good starting point. And again, I don't think there are a lot of limitations around that either. So if you've got that opportunity, if you've got that bent, if you want to invest the time, I think the results are there, which is, again, something that was never there previously. So again, more opportunities. I think it's just a matter of saying, look, I've got to take those by the scruff of the neck and make sure that they work for me.
Certainly. Look, my 9-year-old daughter has an iPad for school, for her schoolwork this year, and she's getting Minecraft books for Christmas. So, her technology exposure and the things that she's doing and platforms like Minecraft now compared to what was available for me when I was 9 years old. Yeah, it's a completely different world now.
Yeah, and I think also too, there is that equality coming, and I think, with the adoption in the schools, you're seeing that. I think we're perhaps just going through a transition where, there's been that significant difference. I think that gap is narrowing. But again, from what I see, it would be nice if it was, narrowing faster, because I think there are a lot of benefits to getting, for all businesses, technology and whatnot. When you do get that equality, I think you get a much much, much better result. But again, we may have to wait for that to obviously move a generation along.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that some women are very conscious of the flip side of that tipping in the other direction, where employers start to hire based on diversity targets. So, yeah, the last thing we want to see is women getting a job over a male colleague purely because she was female, just to fill somebody's diversity quota. That's the last thing that we want to see.
Yeah, and I think, again, that unfortunately that's what we do see in this sort of environment, and that's why I think we need, you know, realistic, those sort of things in, like you said, always employ the best person for the job, and I think we need to encourage some of the best people to actually get into the roles that we need and to fill the skill shortage that we have around IT, because there's just so much that needs to be done, and again, there's so much that needs to be brought to the table, and again, I think, you know, it's a matter of just connecting a few minor connections together, and I think then everything will see much better adoption. But at this point in time, like I said, I still see a bit of a disconnect. I still see a bit of a resistance. I still see a bit of a bias, I suppose, you know, to being a male orientated world. And I don't think it's overt, but it does, I believe, have, you know, ramifications, and does make it, you know, not as good as it really should be.
And you're right, I think the technology is enabling women as well to get into the IT workforce easier than it ever was. I mean, when I wanted to learn IT, apart from doing it at school, you had to go to a TAFE course, or you had to do a Microsoft course, or you had to go to university. And nowadays, there's so many good blogs and podcasts and YouTube videos, and even something like the Microsoft Virtual Academy. It's all online, it's all free, it's fantastic training. So there are so many resources out there for you to learn a new skill or get comfortable with some new technology to step into some of those roles.
Yeah, and importantly, again, they're all at no cost. You can, you know, do it in the privacy of your own laptop, yep, sort of thing. So again, if you're interested, I think that's, you know, a great way to start. But at the end of the day, I think you need to obviously seek out those key people who are going to support you and obviously, you know, guide you in the right direction, help you make the decisions, you know, in any, you know, any career that you do take.
Sure.
That can make a whole lot of difference. So yeah, all in all, like I said, I think there's opportunity there, but there are obviously some challenges for everybody to work through.
Definitely.
All right, well, I think we need to wrap this up. Let Sonia get on with the rest of her day and concentrate on business. So what we'll do, Sonia, is if you just want to obviously give everybody your details and let them know how they can get in contact with you if they so choose, and also maybe just give us a bit of a summary, a bit of a wrap-up from your point of view on the topic we've been covering.
Okay. Bit of a wrap-up. So, yeah, as I said, I am a woman that's been in the technology industry for nearly close to 20 years now. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of being a woman in the industry. And I think, you know, Robin and I, we've said that the outlook is positive, that there are a lot of opportunities out there, and there are a lot of employers doing the right things and a lot of businesses with the right organisational culture about having women in the technology industry. So it's not all doom and gloom. It is a bright-looking future, and that makes me smile in terms of what opportunities may lay ahead for my own daughters should they choose it as a path. So my name's Sonia Cuff. You can reach my blog offthescuff.com. Boring business page is ctaspley.com.au. And look me up on Twitter at @Cuff_S.
Great. Well, I thank Sonia for the time to discuss the topic today. I think it's been worthwhile. I think we've got a lot of great information about it. Again, if you've got any questions or feedback for us, please contact her. I'll make sure all the information is put in the show notes and referred to there, so you can basically click on a link to get that. So again, my name is Robert Crane. The podcast is the Need to Know podcast. You can find more information about me at my blog, blog.ciaops.com. My Twitter handle is @DirectorCIA. With that, I'll bring to a close another episode of the Need to Know podcast. Thank you very much for listening. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to access the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.